Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the October 28, 2019 meeting of the University City City Council to order. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Clay. Present. Councilmember Carr.
Present.
Councilmember McMahon.
Here.
Councilmember Hales.
Here.
Councilmember Cusick.
Here.
Councilmember Smotherson.
Here.
Mayor Crow.
Here. Thank you very much. Before you have the agenda. During our study session, Councilmember Carr asked that under K-2, the EDRST funding be taken on a line-by-line basis. Is there a motion to do the EDRST funding on a line-by-line? There's a motion by Ms. Carr. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Cusick. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We'll now move forward amendment to the agenda. Now a motion to approve the agenda by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Hales. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We have no proclamations this evening before you. You have the August 17th. Are those minutes as well? I'm just curious on that. Or is that just for? Okay, these are to be reported out to the public. So could we please have a motion to approve the August 17th, 2019 strategic plan report? Motion by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Hales. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. You have before you the September 17th joint study session minutes for the EDRST. Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Cusick. Discussion. Mr. Clay.
Yes, I will abstain. I left, according to the minutes, I left 5 minutes early, so I cannot speak to the completion of the
We appreciate the that. Let the record reflect the council member Clay will abstain. Any further discussion on the September 17th minutes? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. September 23rd, 2019, regular meeting minutes, a motion that they be approved. Motion by Mr. Cusick. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Mr. Smotherson.
Yes, sir. I will abstain. I was absent from that meeting.
Thank you very much. Let the record reflect. Councilmember Smotherson will abstain. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. October 14th, 2019, regular meeting minutes. Is there a motion that they be approved? Motion by Mr. Hales, seconded by Mr. Clay. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We'll now move forward to Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to take the opportunity to appoint or nominate James Wilkie to the Parks Commission to fill in as a replacement for Jason Spark.
There's a motion before the body. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. Would like to, do you want me to take the two and three together? Or
One at a time, please.
One at a time. I'd like to reappoint Gloria Neckerson for a second term on the Senior Commission. She's served very ably in her first term, and glad that she has agreed to serve again.
Motion, is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Clay.
My honor to reappoint Carl Reed for the second term on the Senior Commission.
Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Dr. Gene Russell was sworn into the Cal Commission October the 14th in the clerk's office. We will now move to citizen participation. This is for non-agenda items. To those folks who may not have been here before, there are sign-up sheets right by the door that you may fill out. When you come to the podium, each speaker has 5 minutes. When you come to the podium, we ask that you give your name and your address, and then we will move forward with the public speakers. The first to request to speak tonight is Kathy Stratman.
I
My name is Kathy Strotman. I live at 6855 Plymouth Avenue. I'm here tonight to ask the council to consider helping to finance the loop trolley. I don't feel that we've given it enough time to be successful, and I think considering the huge investment that's already gone into it, the amount that's needed to help it go on is, well, not exactly insignificant, but very doable. I think the loop trolley still has a good potential for being successful, and I can't see tearing up the street to undo that without giving it a little better chance. And I think we should all pull together to make it work and to make it happen. I know I'm in the minority, and I've always supported the trolley, but I really think it can still happen, and we should support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next request to speak is Aaron Ginsburg.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, my name is Aaron Ginsburg. I live at 430 West Point Court, and tonight marks the one-year anniversary of Kitty Updates to City Council. In the past week, you City TNR volunteers trapped, neutered, vaccinated, and returned two kittens in Ward 2. That brings our total for the year to 47 community cats vetted at no cost to University City taxpayers. Our volunteers also partnered with local rescue groups and found forever homes for 12 friendly U City strays in the past year. Again, all this work has been done by TNR volunteers at no cost to University City taxpayers. I'm here tonight to thank Mr. Cross and Mr. Dunkel for making it possible to host OpSpot's veterinary van in U City. We're in the process of figuring out the best weekends for both the sponsoring pet charities and the Heman Park Community Center. U City TNR's volunteers are thrilled to be a step closer to making low-cost veterinary care available to all our neighbors. Thank you.
New phone, sorry. Thank you very much. I've got to get that up and cancel. That is the end of our request to speak on non-agenda items. I will now move forward to the consent agenda, where we have three items: pool house, traffic engineering, economic development, strategic plan. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? Motion made by Ms. Carr. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Cusick. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, this item asks Council to hear a presentation from Michael Powers, who is with Habitat for Humanities, on their project. At the conclusion of their presentation, I will be asking Council to withdraw this item so that we can resubmit at a later date. We're needing to make modifications to the agreement. Mr. Powers?
Good afternoon. Thank you for the
Is the microphone working for the speaker? Can you guys hear or no? I'm not sure that one was popping in on that. Okay, we'll try it.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Earlier this year, we engaged the Office of Community Development at St. Louis County about funding that was being clawed back from a project that wasn't successful. At the time, they had $422,000 that was available that we went out for and were able to get a notice of award later in that month. Fortunately, that allows us to build seven new homes in St. Louis County. That'll be a $1.45 million investment in affordable housing in St. Louis County. And our first thought was to come back to the place where we have two successful phases of home construction here in University City. So in our pre-development discussions with the city, we've been looking at various sites that are vacant, sites that are owned by the city, sites that are private and owned by St. Louis County. The project builds on 10 homes that we've constructed starting in 2005. Of the 10 homes that we've constructed in University City, all but one still have their original homeowner in it. All of our home buyers are current on their mortgage. All of them are fully and gainfully employed, and many of them are active in the city of University City with kids in the school district and so forth. At this time, we're hoping to get the council to approve our next steps and kind of guide us in our next steps as we put the full project together. We're again going to look at four-bedroom, two-bathroom homes that will be sold at around $150 to $170, depending on the market conditions at the time. We have some information on our selection process, how to become a Habitat home buyer, and we'll really lean on you in terms of the community engagement side of this as we finish our checklist of due diligence items and move forward with the project. I come at the request of the city manager to answer any questions that might be in front of us at this time and to hopefully work with you in putting a project together that works for the city.
Are there any questions from members of the council? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. What is your approximate cost to build one of these homes?
So, you know, we like to estimate based on a build-ready condition. We haven't done all of the environmental assessments over here, but we think that we're going to be able to build these for around $180, $190. And that doesn't take into account the volunteer labor and the volunteer material that's a part of our model.
Thank you.
Mr. Clay.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Crow, and thank you for coming. Can you talk a little bit about the program? Obviously, as I think most people know, Habitat for Humanity does have some income requirements, both at the bottom and the top, related to potential home buyers. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, certainly. So we try to target right around 50 or 60% of the area median income. Most of our buyers come in with a full-time job. They're postal workers and healthcare assistants. They're working-class families. We have guidelines that sort of dictate the amount of money that we know that the banks are going to want to see you making. And then we also have a target so that we're serving within that demographic, not to go above, you know, a certain ceiling, but with the funding that we have from St. Louis County, we're able to go up to 80% of the area median income. We try to serve folks that wouldn't traditionally be able to get a mortgage on their own, because if you can go out and secure your own mortgage, then what did you, you know, need to utilize us for? We lock them in at a 2.5% interest rate over the 30-year term, and most of our buyers are coming from unaffordable rental, which would be $1,100 to $1,200 or more a month that they're paying for a three-bedroom, to below $700 is what they're paying all in for a mortgage that includes your taxes, insurance, and a home repair fund that we require our buyers to buy into so that when the roof starts to fail or the HVAC system starts to go out, that they have a pot of money there that they can tap into to make those repairs as necessary.
A couple more questions. Thank you. Can you talk a little bit, and you weren't necessarily prepared for this, so you don't have to provide a full answer, but generally speaking, what do you see as the trajectory, income trajectory of your buyers? Do they tend to stay where they are? And I actually would love to get some numbers from you.
Sure.
Germane to this question, but do they tend to stay where they are? Do they increase? Do they some fall back? Just generally speaking, again, would like to get some actual numbers from you.
So, you know, I wish we had tracking on this information. We don't go back to our buyers and ask them to submit W-2s or tax information after the sale. And unfortunately, the vast majority of times that we cross paths again with our buyers is when something is when there's a need, right? So someone's lost a job or is in transition or a kid needs to go to college and wants some guidance or there's a mental health concern, some sort of connective resource that we're providing a linkage to. But what I can say is that we know the data is very clear about the trajectory of home ownership in general and the trajectory of children who grow up in stable housing. And that's more of the data that we tell our story around, right? So 30 years now into the program, launched 400 homes later, we can tell you the only 2% of our buyers have foreclosed in that time frame. We can tell you that over 90% of them still are in that home and keep that home up to a remarkable degree, even in conditions and neighborhoods that we invested in where the neighborhoods around them didn't stabilize. So we try to look for middle neighborhoods like what we're looking at in University City, where you've got access to good schools, good jobs, transportation networks, you know, a strong city government and city leadership. But in terms of the overall income, you know, it only comes in front of us if they go to sell the property, and that's very rare. But we don't further. It's just kind of like you bought the car, you took it off the lot in some cases, except for the wraparound services. We have a lot of anecdotal evidence that this is a life changing program.
And my final question relates to the. Are there restrictions associated with the sale of home? We know that you have persistence of your initial buyer. You have data to support that. But in situations where the home is sold by the initial buyer, what is it? Is the property restricted? And talk about that.
Yeah, so what's good for the neighborhood is that they're going to get a comp on a sale price that is actually much higher than what the buyer's actually going to pay. So let's say I sold you a home for $180,000 and that was the on-market sale price. A portion of that is forgiven by us over a time period. Usually it's 10 to 15 years. So we sell the home for $180,000, but the buyer is actually paying $130,000, $120,000. As they remain in the home, they are forgiven each and every month by us the portion that we have into the project. If they want to flip the house and sell it early, then there are clawback clauses not only from us but from our funders that would ask that we have a shared equity in what the value of the property has gained. So,
okay, so first buyer buys the home. 5 years later, they want to sell it. It does revert back to you for sale again.
For the first 10 years at least on every project, we're going to have the first right to pull that home back into the program.
Okay, but after 10 years, the initial buyer can go to the open market?
Most likely, depending on who's funded the project. So we have our own restriction on the deed, but then there could be others. So I don't want to say in a blanketed way, you know, like the Affordable Housing Trust Fund in the city operates differently than St. Louis County. But typically after 10 years, it's their home. Yeah, it's theirs to build wealth around, to, you know, use the equity as they see fit.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Smotherson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor. I just have a quick question, and I just wanted to know, and thank you for coming tonight, Michael. Is there a component in your assessment of that looks at where you place these houses? I mean, do you really look at the area? Do you look at the statistics about the area you're placing the homes? And I say that because, you know, I think I mentioned this Wednesday in that I'm very concerned about the fact that I don't see that in this process, because you're wanting to put seven homes in one concentrated area, and I'm not sure if you're really looking at that area in reference to crime, if you're really looking at that area in reference to the school district. You know, is there a component in your assessment that actually looks at that?
Yes. So our site selection is based a lot on the demand that we know from our pipeline of buyers. Every year we get about 5,000 calls from interested individuals who want to get out of unstable, unsecure housing. About a quarter of them end up putting in an application. In the application process, they tell us some things about themselves, where they'd like to live, where they work, where their kids go to school, their familial networks and things like that. And we know from the data that we have that there's a high demand for housing that's affordable in University City. People in our program like the University School District. They like the access to the arts, to recreation, to the libraries, to transportation and job. We have more demand for University City than we can fill. So when it comes to looking at the two projects that we've completed so far, we did four homes on Plymouth already. We did two homes on Crest, three homes on Bartmer, and one home on Raymond. Every one of those 10 homes was pre-sold. So the buyer that's coming into the project is putting in 350 hours of sweat equity on the build site. We look at things that you're speaking of in terms of the availability of resources for the buyers and if they'll be successful, if their home will actually raise in value over time. But to be honest with you, it's not carte blanche. So we don't have all of the choices in front of us. We can't go find some vacant lots in Ladue that are on the most perfect lots. It wouldn't work for the program. It would be probably fought against at that level, and it would also be cost prohibitive in terms of acquiring of the land.
But you're saying fought against why?
So we get two pushbacks. Sometimes people think that the program is going to push neighbors out because we're going to increase the values too much and we'll be gentrifying the neighborhood. And the other side, they think that we're concentrating poverty or that our home buyers are, going to be a nuisance to the neighborhood. So those are the two different kind of gestures that we sometimes have to build a new narrative for those who aren't as informed of our program around.
Okay, and do you absolutely think that the houses that you've placed on Bartmer and Plymouth, and do you have any information or of whether that's actually improved or affected the neighborhood? I mean, is there any information about that, any background information you can give us on how you think, or even the people that are in those houses, how do you think you've affected the neighborhoods? Has it changed or revitalized the neighborhood, as your information states?
So we look at various things. I mean, before we put houses up on the blocks that were in the first couple phases, you didn't see very many people pulling permits for new construction. Once we did finish those homes, there have been at least 7 or 8 new homes built within that 4-block radius, and some of them are selling out for as high as 160 that I looked at. But, you know, we are more so serving the client's needs and any concerns that the client has. And what I can tell you about our U City home buyers is that they are very happy. They're not coming to us with issues of nuisance or complaints of fear of safety or issues, life type issues that we're struggling with like we are in some of our other neighborhoods. You have to understand we have 400 homes that are out there, and that's a 30-year track record of families at different stages in life. Some of them are in places that are much worse off than parts of University City that we're looking to invest in. And when we look at where we want to buy property or we want to acquire land to build, we look at different things. And what U City has going for it is the taxes are lower for us than if we were to build. And we finished a Hazelwood build, and the Hazelwood project, the monthly amount in taxes that they're paying is over $120 a month, just absorbed immediately from the taxes. Then the school district and the location, all of that also being a qualifying census tract that HUD requires us to build in, makes it sort of a perfect marriage of opportunity for us.
Mr. Hales.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I was just wondering if you might be able to provide the city manager with the addresses of the properties that you mentioned, I think it was 10, and also roughly the build completion dates, and so he could provide that to us.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hearing no further questions, Michael, thank you very much.
I think we have
a couple of citizens who would like to speak prior to us pulling this from the agenda. Thank you. Our next request to speak is on this agenda item, I believe, is Tricia McQueen.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council, City Manager, and City Attorney. I'm going to read my letter, but I'm going to skip past the first paragraph because really it's just talking about that this item is in the packet. My name is Patricia McQueen, and I live in the Third Ward at 1132 George Street. The Third Ward, especially the northeast quadrant, has a high concentration of vacant residential properties, and the value of the housing stock has not bounced back from the pre-recession levels. Back in 2015, the Bywater Development Group tried to get approval for a similar but larger affordable housing project called Northgate Village and was turned down. It was argued that the proposed housing units will be built in an already depressed area and that no plans were in place to do reconstruction of the large amount of vacant properties in the Third Ward. I admire the work of Habitat for Humanity, and I am sensitive to the need for more affordable housing. But new construction instead of reconstruction of the vacant housing in U City already would be a move in the wrong strategic direction. I would feel more comfortable if, one, the new housing construction could occur in either the second or first wards, where the housing value has recovered from the recession and is a middle market neighborhood where decline is slow, versus a distressed neighborhood. And two, Habitat for Humanity St. Louis will use or could look at using the reconstruction models like Habitat for Humanity Chicago South Suburbs, or, and I'm going to probably mispronounce it, DuPage, Habitat for Humanity. Habitat for Humanity Chicago South Suburbs repairs and renovates existing housing and lead holistic neighborhood renovation revitalization efforts. DuPage Habitat for Humanities are willing to partner with for-profit developers seeking to incorporate affordable housing into their development projects. In other words, the Habitat for Humanity organizations in Chicago seek homes for rehabilitation. Moving ahead with the sales tax, with the sales contracts before engaged community discussion and community and economic development planning is too risky and not, prudent. I would recommend tabling that the agenda item until, which you're going to do, until a strategic neighborhood plans for the Third Ward have been developed or adequate lots are found in the second or first wards. Respectfully submitted, Patricia McQueen. And if I have one more minute, I know that I have collected from 2014 to 2016 listing of vacant properties, and I don't know what the status of vacant properties are now. I would like to get that, and I would like you to have that listing too, so you can see the concentration that is really in the Third Ward, and it lessens as you go further south with the second and first. Also, you have this listing from the project from the 170 in Olive. I'm wondering how many of these properties are actually vacant properties or investor properties. We have to start looking at this before we start jumping up into a project. I'm hoping that we could partner with Habitat for Humanity because they do have a record in other areas where they look at helping with revitalization, reconstructions, and neighborhood revitalization. We're trying to build neighborhood organizations that could engage with you and tell you how things are as we go ahead with our community and economic development in our residential area in the Third Ward. And I think that it would be a win-win for us if that would be the direction they would go instead of building new construction in a depressed area. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Kathy Stratton.
One more thing. Just real brief.
Now,
I'm going to send this to
is
you.
Your third
this,
bite
is
investor, of the apple.
This is an investor article that I think that all of you should read, so I'll send that to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Stratman, thank you very much. And I apologize. I think you were signed up to speak first. I took you folks out of order. If you'll hit the button on the bottom, we'll thank you.
Kathy Stratman, 6855
Plymouth Avenue.
I would like to ask our city and the city council to recommend that we work with Habitat for Humanity and encourage them to rehab existing homes in the Third Ward to help our current and existing citizens bring their homes up to code and help them try to get some of their equity back, which, as Pat mentioned, we have not recovered from the 2008 plunge as some of our homes in the first and second ward. We do not need to build more affordable, which is synonymous with low-income homes in our already depressed area. I don't know who you talk to about our area over there, but trust me, we have some very serious problems over there. I think it would be an injustice to put new families over there thinking they're upgrading their status of living, when indeed they're in a very depressed and sometimes dangerous, fragile neighborhood. I have some statistics I'd just like to read to you. Substantial portions of the monies for Habitat for Humanity are taxpayer dollars. The Plymouth Project is dependent upon the St. Louis County Home Fund for a large portion of the money to complete this project. Home funds can also be used to rehab homes in high poverty areas. This strategy helps current residents make improvements to their homes. Areas of concentrated poverty, which this area definitely is, have decreasing housing values, which impedes the ability of current residents to borrow from banks. Cities and governments have been sued for disparate impact. The legal definition of disparate impact is an unnecessary discriminatory effect on a protected class caused by a practice or policy, as in unemployment or housing, that appears to be non-discriminatory. From the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, this is a quote, "Disparate impact occurs when government or certain private actors unjustifiably pursue practices that have a disproportionately harmful effect on communities of color and poverty and other groups that are protected by the FHA. This standard is often used in challenging discrimination in mortgage lending, homeowners insurance, exclusionary zoning, redevelopment, and demolition of public housing. Disparate impact helps to screen out covert racial discrimination, as well as practices that may seem neutral on their face, but actually exacerbate segregation or the effects of prior racial discrimination. Overconcentration of affordable housing, low-income housing, is a poor long-term strategy in neighborhoods of high concentration of poverty and are predominantly black. This dilutes the financial and social viability of a neighborhood, leading to economic decline or stagnation. The concentration of affordable housing, low-income housing, in distressed inner city neighborhoods traps low-income children in dangerous places, Plymouth, where public schools are failing. The terms affordable housing and low-income housing are interchangeable. Habitats for Humanity and other cities across the country are participating in projects that are concentrating on revitalizing neighborhoods. These neighborhoods have established revitalization plan in place. These plans include safety, rehabilitation, reconstruction, job opportunities, transportation, etc. They are complementing each other. Habitat for Humanity sells only to low-income buyers, which diminishes the viability of neighborhoods in high concentration of poverty. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stratman. The city manager has that. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Carr.
I have a question. I think it goes along with Councilmember Hales. Of the three lots that we're looking at, are they totally empty, or are there structures on those lots?
Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, these are vacant lots.
These are totally vacant lots. Okay.
That is correct.
Thank you.
As I understand, Mr. Rose, we've pulled this item, and we'll bring it back at a later date.
That is correct. I am recommending that the item be withdrawn and to be reinstated at a later date.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. We've had a discussion of this item, and we'll bring this up at a later date. Let's move forward now with K2, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, this item asks Council to consider the allocation of EDRST funding for the following projects. If it is acceptable to the Council, we'll simply read in the projects and then allow for discussion and action on each individual project.
Right. The one thing, just so everyone, Mr. Edwards has signed up for item number K2, and so, Joe, there's going to be a line item per one. I'm not sure which ones you necessarily want to speak to, and there's no one else who is requested to speak. So if you'll give me a signal at some point in time that you'd like to speak to an item, I know that the Council will be happy to hear you, but we'll take these one by one if that's okay with Mr. Rose. Is that right? All right, let's move forward. Mr. Rose, where would you like to start?
The first item is the Loop Special Business District Lighting Study, Kingsland to Limit, $19,000.
Is there a motion to approve the EDRST request for Loop Special Business District Lighting Study? Motion by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Cusick. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. We'll now move forward. Mr. Rose.
Loop Special Business District Brochure and Illuminated Directory Signs, $14,000.
If there's to be a discussion on it, we still have to have a motion to approve. Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Cusick, is there a second? Seconded by Mr. McMahon. Discussion. Ms. Carr.
Thank you, Mayor. So I did give you a packet, and the packet specifically addresses, on the first page, specifically addresses the brochures and illuminated directory signs, of which the EDRST has recommended $14,000. But you will notice in this email from our interim director or acting director of finance, he says, and I quote, "My understanding, the $14,000 request includes brochures and directories. I've attached a copy of Engraphics invoice for $6,520 and a copy of canceled check 2518. Together, the $5,275 with the brochures and $6,520 for the directories equals $11,795. In total, the East Loop SID should be invoiced at 50%. That's because East Loop businesses are also listed. $5,897.50. The breakout there is for the brochures and the directories. That still leaves last year's request a balance of $8,102.50 unspent for brochures and directories. So it appears that the LSBD wrote a check, actually wrote two checks, and I put those bills in your packet, one to Kiku Abata for the design and printing of the brochure, and I have two here so that you can take a look at them. So I'll just, if you'll just pass that around, I'll start there. So you get an idea of what this is. But we've only spent, we have only funded, and should only fund about $6,000 or less than $6,000. So why the $14,000? I think that typically we have been doing that. I don't know whether we have been underwriting the East, which we should not be doing. Or it certainly is my intent that we not underwrite the city. Just so you realize that now the East Loop SID gets about $400,000 a year as opposed to what the LSBD gets, which is about $80,000 plus whatever the EDRST provides in funding, roughly about $100,000 or $120,000 for a variety of projects, including this one. So this is an over-ask, in my opinion. I would like to see this amended, and in fact, I'm going to make a motion to amend the $14,000 to $6,000 to cover the share of the cost of the brochures and directories for the West or University City Loop portion, And hopefully the East Loop SID will come up with their share. To date, they have not yet been invoiced or paid for the share from last year. And I don't know if they ever have in previous years. So it is not clear. If you look at, if you look at the page after the invoices, there is a Loop Special Business District budget overview from 2010 and 2011. This was, at this time, the EDRST was not funding the project for the brochures, and you could see that the East Loop SID did pay some amount, about $4,704, compared to the University City side. Now, this was when there was an SBD or a special business district, as opposed to a SID or a community improvement district. At that time, the SBD was not generating enough funds, and so typically the payout was about two-thirds from the University City side and one-third from the East side. But clearly they are now, they now have adequate funding to pick up their share, their fair share, 50-50, of this particular brochure and the directory. So again, my motion is to amend the amount from $14,000 to $6,000 to cover the cost of brochures and directories.
There's a motion. I believe there's a second. Is that correct, by Mr. Kusick? I believe discussion. A couple of things. And I assume Mr. Edwards will probably would like to speak. One of the things I would like to ask of my colleagues is, as we look at this, I think it would be good for us to determine whether or not there has been any other type of agreement that has gone on. We have no idea whether that is in fact the case. And so I'm hoping that the city manager can look through this as well as the director of finance to see whether or not there has been either a request for reimbursement or there's been some other, what I would say would be an agreement of revenue or expense sharing, or whether or not there's been an informal agreement, because it does strike me as odd otherwise that we would be paying for the entire brochure unless there was some other funding that the East was then putting in that we are not aware of at this time. Mr. Edwards. Yeah, Joe, hey, Lorit.
Sorry.
Here's some of these.
Joe Edwards, 6504 Delmar, Chairman of the Loop Special Business District. A couple of things. One, in all the years past, that's already been approved and properly paid for by both entities. This year, invoices have been sent to the East Loop to pay for their share of it. I'm not sure why it's going in and out.
We can hear you.
You can hear you. Okay. On the brochures, it is split 50-50. That's the easiest way to fairly split it. Both parts get benefit from that. On the illuminated directories, even though we're probably splitting at 50-50, there are four in University City and three in the city of St. Louis. So theoretically, it could be 4/7 and 3/7. But I think the East Loop SID is fine keeping things clear in that regard and splitting at 50-50. The reason why it's very short-sighted to reduce the amount from $14,000 to $6,000 is that these are both supposed to be updated twice a year. And sometimes with all volunteers, it's hard to get all that data put in and typeset and followed up on, and the descriptions, the phone numbers, the websites of all the new businesses, and make sure all the old ones are taken off. This year, we're on track to do it twice during this fiscal year, from July 1st to June 30th. The new ones are up right now, both the illuminated directories, which people, you can see visitors to St. Louis going here all the time and pointing, oh, let's do this, let's go here. And the same way with the Loop directories that we send to everybody, every visitor center, downtown people, all the hotels and all, and they ask for them and use them and bring people into the Loop. It's one of our most valuable tools to bring people into the Del Mar Loop. There's no advertising inside. It's all factual information. And the city of St. Louis wishes they had something like this for downtown, and they don't. So during this fiscal year, when the second time it comes around this March or April, then the second round of expenditure will take place. So, and it really is needed in order to do that. Otherwise, we're going to be left at the once-a-year thing. The fact that it wasn't spent in 1 year this last year doesn't, it's not the end of the world. That can just be put back in the EDRS funds. We're not spending it on anything else. So I would request that you consider keeping it the same at approximately $14,000 to make sure we have enough to do it twice and keep everything updated with the media and all. If you look at that brochure, there's so much information on there that makes the media keep it for reference. All the Walk of Fame stars are listed and where their stars are located, the map of the loop, where the parking is, what year a business opened, all the things that make the media think, oh, I'm going to keep this and do a story on this area. So that would be my response.
I understand, but I guess my question is, you're saying that the East has paid, and we're trying to figure out where they've paid or how they've paid, because we don't seem to have any. No one is questioning the validity of the directory or the directories, I don't think. I think what's being questioned is if we're footing 100% of the bill and no one has been able to show us that we're only paying 50% of the bill, then I think the council has a question as to someone's got to show us where the East Loop paid their fair share. And I think right now as I'm listening to my colleagues, we don't have that information in front of us. The EDRST clearly, as they voted, supported the idea of the directory and the directories. But I think what council is asking is, where is the exchange of funds when the East Loop then has reimbursed us for the half of the project?
Well, it's my understanding, I'm not the treasurer, but the treasurer has invoiced the East Loop SID, and they will pay their part of it.
I'm sorry. Mr. Rose?
Honorable Mayor, Council, I believe two issues. One is the council is asking for evidence that payment has occurred, and I believe Mr. Edwards is indicating that they have been invoiced, but uncertain as to whether payment has been received. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I don't know myself, not being the treasurer. All I know is that that City Hall has been invoiced for over $20,000 of items that the City Hall has not paid back to the East, back to the U-City SBD. So, you know, I guarantee it'll be done. Well, and I'd pay it tonight if you'd want it paid tonight.
Let me just indicate, I don't believe that we have received any evidence that the payment has been received. And I'm looking at our acting finance director, Keith, so he's shaking his head no. So that is the case. With regards to the statement that you made about the invoices to the city, the issue of concern there is that we still must reconcile the Loop Special Business District account. And until we're able to do so, it would not be prudent to provide additional funding in an area where we are unable to reconcile it at this point. I believe that we are going to get there. I certainly hope that we will. I know that our acting finance director is working very closely with the consultant that you have in trying to do so, but we still have some areas of concern and issues that still need to be addressed.
And I think, according to the treasurer of the Loop, that every invoice has been supplied to the finance director. And in fact, when he first brought them in a few months ago, he was told that, oh, you don't have to have all the backup invoices, just give the invoices, not the backup documents and all from the different companies. Then later on, we do need those after all. And so he went back and he got all those. He and the accounting firm that the Loop has hired, with the approval of everybody, has, as far as I know, it's all been done. It's not been reconciled with the city yet, but it's more on the city side and not the Loop SBD side.
Mr. Edwards, I can assure you that that is incorrect. We have not received all of the invoices. What was received was information, perhaps a document that a check was written, but not the actual invoice that provides the evidence of why a check was written. So I know that Mr. Cole is still working very hard to obtain that information. but I can assure you that it has not all been obtained.
Okay, and I've been assured by the treasurer that everything that was requested was given, so that's, I'm not the treasurer, so I don't know, but that's okay. It's easily worked, can easily be worked out, I think. It's just an accounting thing.
Well, the only, and Joe, you and I have known each other a long time, and the only thing I would say is that if it was easily worked out, it's taken us an awful long time to get this done. So it hasn't actually been as easy to get. And by the way, I think all of us up here, since we're pretty much volunteers as well, we understand what it is like with volunteers doing a lot of this work. But it clearly hasn't been easy because we're still trying to get all this information put together. So again, I think that the motion before is to reduce the funding just for this one item, as I understand it. And my guess is that if my colleagues find that, in fact, the funds have come from the East Loop to reimburse us, they're probably more than likely to want to say we get, now that we've been reimbursed and we only paid half. I can't put that word in everybody's mouth, but my guess is that's something that we'd be interested in knowing. But at this time, we're kind of being asked to fly blind here that we've been reimbursed when we don't think we have been from the East side. And I think we recognize that there continues to be some concern about the use of LSBD or EDRST funds in particular for the East side that is not within University City. And so I think, unless I'm missing it, and I'm going to let my colleague speak, I think there is a concern about reimbursement from the East Loop. Let me let some of my colleagues
very,
speak.
Very valid. I'm not saying it's not valid to bring it up.
I'm not sure. By the way, I apologize. If my colleagues, I don't know who was first.
Yeah.
I have no clue. Mr. Hales.
Thank you. I just want to kind of circle back to the motion and make sure I understand this clearly. So last year we approved $14,000 that was recommended by EDRST. Of that, with what should be reimbursed, there should be a surplus of just over $8,000. And your suggestion in this motion is to provide $6,000, which covers essentially a little more than the cost of last year, our 50%. Is that?
That is correct. That is the amount that we actually paid. This is not a should be.
Correct.
That is the amount that was actually paid for the brochures, our half of the brochures. Whether it was reimbursed or not, it should have been reimbursed. And so the LSBD has already written a check for this amount. When they get that money back, the question is, for us, will they return it to the EDRST, or will they bank it?
Right, and that really is my question. I don't think that that's a necessarily terrible proposal, given that, as I understand it, there's $8,102.50
right,
sitting in an account that should be earmarked for this, and that doesn't go back to the
well,
EDRST.
Well, not all 8,000. In fact, I apologize, Councilmember Hales. Right now, the LSBD has drawn checks in the amount of $11,795. Half of that should be reimbursed. Now, remember, that's not for this year coming up. That's not the funding we're talking about today. That's the funding that we gave last year. So that should be cut in half. That amount should be cut in half. And as Mr. Cole said, if in fact it was reimbursed, that they didn't use all $14,000 to pay, those brochures are done. That was financed by last year's money. So, you know, so whatever's coming up would be financed by this year's money. And so they didn't spend or shouldn't have spent about $8,000. So it's asking for more than twice what they actually need for the project.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from. If there's mm-hmm. a surplus, what happens to it? If they keep it, why is there a need for $14,000 if we're starting with $8,000?
Thank you. Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Edwards, just for clarification, you stated that the current request for the $14,000 is because there will be two print runs and distributions of the brochure?
Yeah, the goal is to do it approximately every 6 months.
And then, but there's nothing in the EDRST application that states that that was for distribution of the brochure twice. Is that correct?
I haven't read it recently, but that's I'm stating it as a fact now. That's the goal.
Okay. So there's nothing in the EDRST application that really gave them information to make their decision that there would be two different distribution times for the brochure?
Not on the short form I have here. Maybe in the long form there might have been. I don't know. But I'm just stating that's the goal and always has been. And if we don't spend the money, we don't get the money. It goes back to the EDRST fund, as it will this last year. I would recommend strongly that you keep the $14,000 in and see us do it twice this year to benefit all of the area.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Carr.
Thank you. Well, the request was not to do it twice, so that's a change on the request, but it's also a fact that the EDRST was not advised about last year's expenditures. So what you're looking at, and Mr. Cold has written here to me, and as you can see, these communications took place just maybe a week or so ago. So this is not old information. There was no indication of when the East Loop SID would be invoiced, and as I looked at his response tonight, they haven't been invoiced. He promised that I would have a copy of the invoice and check when that was made. So I want to honor the decision by the EDRST to produce this brochure and the directory as applied for. But I think that making a request for more than twice what was actually spent and has been spent traditionally is reasonable. And then to address Councilmember Hale's question. When the EDRST, when the LSBD writes that check and they get and were they to get a check back, it is not clear that they refund that money to the EDRST. It is probably more clear by looking at their ledger that they deposit that, and so they are keeping that extra money. That's a decision that should be made by the EDRST and council if we want to overfund and have them put that into their reserves. Because, quite frankly, until the city started looking at it and these questions started to be asked, we didn't know that they were paying a lot less for this. The only way you could ever come close to $14,000, which they've asked for 2 years, and $13,000 in previous years, is to assume that the LSBD was paying for the entire amount. And until we have invoices and canceled checks that say that the LSBD has been reimbursed, we don't know that. So let's certainly fund it at the amount that is required to produce these brochures and update these directories. But let's not overfund it, because we can use those economic dollars and invest them in other areas of economic redevelopment.
The SBD is not asking you to overfund anything. And if you need payment tonight, I will make it to satisfy that request. I think doing it twice a year really is important.
I don't think anyone's denying that doing it twice a year is important, Joe. I don't think anyone is saying that. I think what we're saying is we probably want to get the financial house in order, and if in fact we need to, if the LSBD needs to come back again for more funding, I think that's perfectly fine. But I do, again, and I'm only speaking for myself, but I think that the requests that are being made by the city manager and council for us to have a better understanding of not just the invoicing, but the reimbursement of the LSBD by the East Loop, I think is extremely important.
No, it's reasonable.
And then the second part would be when the funds come back, then are they just sitting with the LSBD, or are they coming back to the EDRST? By the way, I don't necessarily think the EDRST is looking to get money back. I think the question is just, if we're being asked to spend $14,000, let's use that as the number, and $7,000 of it's supposed to come from the East Loop SID, and so we spend the $14,000, they give you the $7,000, then what happens to the $7,000? And I think those are all very fair questions, frankly, I think that I was a little concerned as to the questions that my colleague Ms. Carr was asking, but I think that the amendment she is asking to make is reasonable at this time. And I think really though you've said that this is easy for us to do, I got to tell you, and with all sincerity to all of my colleagues and the staff and people from the LSBD, I'm kind of tired of hearing about the finances between the LSBD and the city, because we've been working to clean them up now for at least the past 3 months. And I recognize that they are, I recognize they're volunteers, but, you know, at some point in time, you know, there has to be an accounting done where we understand what we spent, what we've got, what we've been reimbursed before we put more money in. And so anyway, I don't believe there's anyone else who is asked to speak. We have an amendment before us. I mean, Joe, I know the light is on. Do you have any other comments you'd like to make, or we have a motion before
No,
us.
I would recommend that Mr. Cole and the accounting firm just meet. It doesn't affect this motion necessarily, but I think that it could be solved pretty quickly, I would think.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We have a motion before us, and I have to tell you, it's been so long since the motion was made, I would request that either Ms. Carr or Ms. Reese, who has it, can tell me what the amendment is.
I move that we amend the amount granted to the LSBD for this project from $14,000 to $6,000.
Okay, there was a second. There has been discussion. Those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Therefore, the brochure will be at $6,000. Am I correct? If it's a line item, since we reduced it to six, do I need to vote again?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, yeah, we have an amended agenda item then that's gone from 14 to six. Is that?
There's been discussion regarding this other $8,000 or so, and what should happen to that. And I guess if it comes back to EDRST, would it have to be then appropriated again to get to the 14?
Well, but let's not cross that bridge tonight. I just really want to. I had an amendment which I approved, so now I've got to take a vote on the funding for the EDRST for loops, brochures, and illuminated directory signs of $6,000. Is that what Mr. McMahon is asking me to do? So there's a motion by Mr. McMahon. There's seconded by Mr. Hales. Any further discussion? Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Rose, can we move forward to the next item?
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, the next item is the Loop Special Business District St. Louis Visitor's Guide Ad and Promotions, $14,000.
Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. Hales, is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Clay. Discussion. Ms. Carr.
So I'm going to pass around the pages that are contained in this this visitor's guide. Again, I'm making, so you can go around me just that way. I'm not passing judgment on whether we should fund this or not. In fact, the problem appears to me to be that we have never received an invoice from Madden Media, which is the group that produces the St. Louis Visitor's Guide. What we have instead is an invoice on Blueberry Hill stationery that tells us what we are due. We also have a partial payment of the whatever amount it is, 32 or 23 or whatever, and I can pull that up if we need to discuss that further, about $7,000 from the East Loop SID, The reason, given that only one-third of the businesses listed come from the east side and two-thirds come from the University City side. Again, I'm not passing judgment on that, but without the invoice from Madden, I am reluctant to hand over the money at this time, and so I would like to make an amendment that, or make a suggestion that we do fund this, but that we withhold payment for this until such a time as the invoice is produced for the last year from Madden, and going forward, every year we need to see an invoice from Madden Media or whatever. Whatever company is producing this at the time. So no more of these kind of filtered invoices. I can't imagine that anybody would accept that that kind of a situation.
I get your amendment for this year. I don't think we can bind future councils, but I get it for.
Okay. No, that. I'm just suggesting that, but.
Okay. Okay. So there was a motion to approve funding for the St. Louis Visitors Guide in the amount of $14,000, payment to be made upon proof of receipt from the publisher. Was the publisher
correct,
or was that the company? Second. There's a motion out there. It's a dangling motion. There's a second by Councilmember Cusick. Is there discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, next one, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Councilmember, the next item is the Loop Special Business District Special Events, $85,000.
Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. Hale, seconded by Mr. McMahon. Ms. Carr.
Again, this is one of those undefined, so we have $80,000. If you look at the packet that I gave you, what you will see on the, I would say, the second whole page from the back, this is actually from 2018, and it lists the events that were given, events that were held, and the amount. And so, so essentially, for all of those events in 2018, including things like event management, et cetera, we wrote a check for $8,149.72. I do believe that events are important. We had that discussion before. I do believe we should fund it, but I don't know for how much, and I don't know for what events. And so until we receive some kind of a budget breakout, I think it's... You know, I don't know what exactly we're paying for. And since we are responsible for taxpayer dollars and the EDRST funds our taxpayer dollars, I'd like to make sure that we have some kind of a plan. Now, if you'll look at the last page, it says marketing meeting from our Lequier 7/17/2019. This is a copy of what she provided to the people who attended the marketing media. The marketing meeting, and you can see that that for going forward, because this is the current year, she's talking about $50,500 from each side, not 85. I really want a breakout, and I know that we asked for additional events that aren't listed here. This was produced in July, and we have since asked for additional events. So I don't think we should withhold the money. I think we should allocate it, but not release it until such a time as we have a detailed budget, not unlike the budget that was produced in 2010 and actually other years subsequent to that for the events. It's an accountability issue.
Was there an amendment in that one? Is there a motion?
Okay, the motion is to approve the $85,000 not to be released until such a time as a detailed line item budget is submitted for those events.
Is there, real quickly, is it going to be submitted to, I assume, the city manager?
Yes. Well, yes.
I mean, I think at some point in time, council needs to, will need to let the administration take over that part of it. But if it, we say to the city manager.
Well, okay. I'm not asking for it to be submitted to me.
We may question that a little bit in jest, Paula, but that's
go
because
ahead,
we're all
go ahead
that's
and
because
question,
we're all
Gary. Some of us do our homework. Some of us do our homework.
There's a motion by Ms. Carr. That is there a second by Mr. Cusick? I assume Joe would like to speak to this. Yes, sir. If you can hit the microphone. Thank you.
I just brought all the line items, one for each council member and the city manager, and just a sample poster, too, but that breaks it down, and I would be happy to give it to you right now. Rochelle Lecuyer, the executive director, has done a remarkable job, only being on the job over a year, by putting a lot of these events together and improving some of the others. To break down the $85,000 quickly, hopefully, Parking Day, Friday in September, $1,500 for marketing, PR, and advertising. $750 for activities, face painting, musicians, printing, $750. UCD permits and public work staff, $1,500 for a total of $4,500. Chalk the Loop in September, marketing, PR, and advertising, $1,500. Materials, $250. Printing, $750. UCD permits and public work staff, $1,500 for a total of $4,000. Halloween, a Sunday in October, dog, pet, scavenger hunt, and costume contest, marketing, PR, and advertising, $1,750, activities, face painting, $500.
Joe, do you really want to go through this line by line? We appreciate that you're giving this
well,
to us.
Well, it's here is all I'm saying. I won't go through it all. I'll just name the events then. Get Loop First Fridays, $5,000. Holidays, Loop Ice Carnival, et cetera, including all the ones on this flyer, which are pretty impactful media-wise and attendance-wise, $39,800. Lease the Loop Real Estate Brokers Roundtable, $475. Lease the Loop Real Estate Tour, $725. Delmar Loop Week, $9,000. That's the whole week in June. Make Music Day, Loop Arts Festival, Wear Magazine and Map Dining Guide. Then upcoming things, the holiday window painting is coming up right now that the merchants are paying $85 each for. Early stages of planning for another major event, whether it's Taste of Loop or Loop in Motion, although somebody might have rights to the name Loop in Motion. Maybe Style in the Loop with fashion could be part of that new major event. Afterglow, which the executive director came up with wonderfully to attract people after the annual balloon glow and back to school in August. So here is what you requested right here tonight. And thank you for voting for this, I hope.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, Council recently met with the Loop Special Business District Board and identified a total of four major events that you would like to see occur within the Loop over the course of the next year. Those events included the Ice Carnival, Taste of the Loop, Loop in Motion, and a yet-to-be-decided-on fourth major event. So I believe that we will need to reconcile the $85,000 with the direction that's been given by the Mayor and Council to the Loop Special Business District with what they are proposing for events. And so that would certainly be my intention to work with I or my designee to work with the Loop Special Business District, and the certainly I'll be working with the council to reconcile that issue.
Ms. Carr.
Thank you, Mr. Rose, because I think that makes it very clear. There are a couple of things on here that I don't think we need to pay for, and they're relatively small amounts, but it was my understanding that the economic development function would be taken over by our city for our segment of the Loop. Is that correct, Mr. Rose?
Mayor Pro Tem, the intention is for the Director of Economic Development to provide the same level of service to the Loop as what she provides the rest of the city as it relates to economic development. That is correct.
Okay.
And in the past, that has not been the case.
Okay, so Lease the Loop Real Estate Brokers Roundtable may not be for us, or is it is something we would like to see?
Honorable Mayor Pro Tem, I don't have an answer for you at this time. That's something I would need to coordinate with the director.
Okay. And then I have one more question. In light of the fact that that we have identified what we wanted out of the various events, and the fact that you said that you would be working with this, I think I'm still, you know, while this is certainly a more of a step in the direction of feeling a little more comfortable, it isn't toward the goals that we set up as a result of that joint meeting. And so so I'm going to keep my motion in place, my amendment in place, and say, in fact, that that the city manager and or his designee should work with the LSBD to put together a plan for the events, and at that point, then the money should be released for each of the events as needed.
Mr. Kusick.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got two or three questions, Mr. Edwards. The sheet that Councilmember Carr gave us that from the marketing meeting with Rachel Lequier from July 17th, that her total for events is only $50,500, yet this line item that you gave us, which matches the EDRST, is $85,000. So why is there that discrepancy?
Because this is for the coming year. It's been very, very difficult to plan any events without knowing that the money's there. Normally, this would have been approved at your June meeting. To be October 28th and not know for sure if we're going to have funds for Loop Ice Carnival, for other events, small ones or big ones, even Halloween. I mean, that happened yesterday. It's page 2 of the Post-Dispatch. There's a nice big photograph. The benefits are unbelievable. And Rochelle got up and went on TV on a Sunday morning at the 7 o'clock show just to publicize it. So all this is being done without having the confidence that the money is going to be there. But we still kept going forward. And the $85,000 is for this fiscal year, July 1st through June 30th of 2020.
Okay, thank you for that. And then some of these on this line item statement, some of these budget items are specific only to University City, but the ones that are for that the whole loop, which would include the East Loop in the city of St. Louis, are they in agreement with these events and with these budgets, and have they already committed to these, or what process do they utilize for authorizing the same types of expenditures for these events?
On the events that are shared marketing from Kingsland to the East, usually it's 50-50, and they have approved everything that is shared. If something is only in U City, that's one thing. If something's only over there, that's another. They're just as determined and bound by you and myself to keep things separate and clear. And the CID has gone out of its way to do that and has done that.
And the CID has already approved their share of these expenditures?
Yeah.
When do they do that about?
Oh, anytime there's a board meeting when this type of item comes up. It's done in a general way. It's split up into thirds. It's hard to, it would take me a half an hour to tell you how it's split up, but it's split up between safe and, you know, clean and marketing events and so on and so. But yes, they I can guarantee you that they were very strict on making sure it's anything that's collected over there is paid over there, anything collected over here is paid over here. And that's why it's good to get this accounting firm together with City Hall to to justify all those figures, and then everybody can finally sigh of relief.
And so is the amount of money being requested from the East Loop, Sid, this is also $85,000?
No, there's more because there are certain other things with certain developments and certain far, far east of the Wabash Station that only apply to that area, so that's not being requested here.
But all of these...
And that might be more than this figure for the East Loop.
Understood. And all of these items are... However, all of these items on here are on their budget and they've approved these?
Well, in a general way, if not a specific way. Let me take a quick look. I mean, the major events, definitely. The brochures, definitely. The visitor's guide, yes. Electrical boxes, no.
I'm sorry, which one did you say no?
Paint the electrical boxes.
Okay.
You know, like the traffic light boxes mm-hmm. with nice designs and all, which might or might not happen. I'm just saying that's...
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, you can answer this later on to the city manager, but I guess my question is, when we get this tonight, is this something that the LSBD board has already... Has this come before the board, and have they approved it before it came to us, or is this Rochelle and you, your work product, and then it comes to us? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, the director of development, Libby Tucker, recommended that I bring this tonight, and so I worked on it on the weekend and brought it tonight.
And so is there...
That breaks down to $85,000 right, more no, clearly.
Yeah, I have that part. I guess the process part of me, which is not nearly as strong as others, would be, is this at some point in time going to be an agenda item for the LSBD board so that they will take a vote on this? Because it seems to me like if we're being asked to look through this and to find ways to make it work, then that it would make sense for the LSBD board to have voted on this as well.
Well,
that may not be the protocol you followed in the past. I'm just curious if that's part of it.
No, we can do it. At the next meeting, we can vote on it at that time. And all through the years, the history of this is we used to break it down like this. And the Economic Development Commission themselves said, you know, this is kind of nuts. You guys really know what to do. And why not lump them all together in one thing? And that's the way it had been year after year because of that. And the council approved that year after year because some years... There might be a zip line ride that costs so-and-so, and if that doesn't happen, then we can put funds towards something else, a different event. And they said, we want to give you the flexibility to do that. We trust you with it because you've done it volunteer-wise all these years. So that's how that even evolved.
Right.
We can do it this way from now on, but it's still hard. You know, what if there's a big sleet storm on a Halloween thing? Then all of a sudden it has to be moved inside. It costs more to move it inside, or it costs less because it's canceled altogether. They wanted us to have that flexibility, as did the council through the years. So the Loop board did vote on $85,000. They did not vote on specific breakdowns. Right. They knew what the events were, but they didn't vote specifically line by line. But I put this together at the request of the Economic Development.
Correct. Thank you. In my old age, I have found that pendulums swing, and sometimes they swing to the let's do it in bulk, and sometimes they swing to detail. It seems like we're more in a detailed mode. So we have a motion before us, and I I don't know, Ms. Reese, you have Ms. Reese or Ms. Carr.
I would like to amend the motion to reflect that we are approving the $85,000 upon collaboration with the city manager and or his designee with regard to the various events that will be held. Is that, am I close?
Release.
Okay. That is correct. And those events are consistent with the direction that the mayor and council provided during the joint meeting.
If there's a motion, is there a second?
Oh, point of clarification. Mm-hmm. Is your amendment to the line item or to a previous motion?
It's to the previous motion. There was a motion made
motion
to fund
approve.
For 80.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's
that's
an
correct.
Amendment to that
correct.
Motion.
Any further discussion? We already have the amendment out. Is there any further discussion of the amendment to, in layman's terms, have the city manager work for validation of expenses? Any further questions on the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As amended, we now have before us the special events for Loop of $85,000. Those in favor, is there any further discussion of that item as amended? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And we are working our way through. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, the next item is Mannequins on the Loop Public Art Project with recyclables, $21,000.
Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. Cusick. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Ms. Carr.
No.
Hearing no discussion, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, the final item is the Winco Windows Automation Equipment Upgrade, $175,000 in the form of a no-interest loan for $150,000 and a forgivable loan for $25,000 if stated jobs are created. City staff intends to work with the representatives from Winco to put together an agreement that would be brought forward to the Mayor and Council for approval.
Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. Hale, seconded by Ms. Carr. Is there discussion? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Rose, have we done this in the past, to give no interest or low interest, in this case it would be a no interest loan, to businesses before University City?
Honorable Mayor and Councilmember Cusick, I am not aware of the city providing no or low interest loans. The legislation does allow for it.
Thank you.
Ms. Carr.
So actually, we did do some forgivable loans, in fact, towards the loop as a result of the construction. So I can't remember whether it was $50,000 or $100,000. So I think we've done that before. I just wanted to make sure, I did hear Mr. Rose say it, but I wanted to make sure that when the terms of this loan are clearly written down, I'd like to make sure that we take a look at this and see it. Just so you know, if you sell something as a producer to someone else and you are not really the point of sale, we don't get any taxes on that. So it's sale for resale. But for me, the benefit here is the increased wages and the stability of a company that stays and grows here. So it's back to our study session. So it's not necessarily sales taxes. That's not to say that you couldn't walk into Winco and perhaps buy the windows directly, but if they sell it to Mr. Smith's window and door store, then they would be the end seller, and they would get the taxes. So the sales taxes might not occur here, but the job growth and the growth of the company would.
Any further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Clay.
I am curious, given we have not endeavored to do, at least in recent memory, any sort of loan that actually needs to be repaid. There is a repayment requirement. Are we working with any sort of outside entity, consultant, to kind of help us develop the terms associated with that?
I'm pretty
sure. Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clay, we have not engaged an outside consultant at this point. We'll certainly intend to work with our city attorney and identify similar types of agreements that have been made across the region. I don't know that there is a reason for having a consultant at this point, but certainly if we struggle with putting together the terms, then I would return to the council and request funding for a consultant.
And I use the term consultant more loosely. I think there is advice that we could seek that is not necessarily compensated advice, because this is not a complicated transaction. There are some things that you need to be mindful of in going into it.
Right. I think that the EDRST and their actions, for those of you who may have been there that evening, respected the request made by Winco and the stability that they have given us in Cunningham Industrial Park, and the fact that they're going ahead with the loan. We also felt that, due to the fact that the EDRST has a sizable fund balance and that this is money to be paid back, I think also Winco itself has a very good track record, a long-term track record in our community. So I think the EDRST had instructed the city manager to work with the city attorney to simply draw up the appropriate paperwork so that we had the security that we needed. I'm not sure there was a great deal of concern, but we also recognize that downturns in the economy occur. And this council is one that I hope people always recognize that we're ready for a clawback when we need one. We've been down that road before. Any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Rose. We will now move forward to unfinished business. Bill number 9394. May we have the second reading?
An ordinance relating to pit bull dogs.
May we have the third reading?
An ordinance relating to pit bull dogs.
Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. McMahon. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Smotherson. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Madam Clerk. I apologize, Ms. Carr.
Just as many of you have, we've received a few emails, some with some graphic details. I suppose that could, and I know terriers very well. I had one for 17 and a half years. I had a Cairn Terrier like Toto, but still he was pretty vicious in that he took out neighbors' cats and things like that. So sometimes sometimes the breeding or the breed has some issues. I don't know where I stand on this. I just really don't. I understand that it's not breed specific, but it's towards an aggressive dog. But how do you determine if the dog is aggressive until after the act, until after something has happened? And so for that reason, I will be abstaining because I just don't feel that I can comfortably make a decision one way or another.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Carr?
Abstain.
Councilmember McMahon?
Aye.
You went out. Sorry, Lurie.
Aye. Never mind.
Councilmember Hales?
Aye.
Councilmember Cusick?
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson?
Aye.
Councilmember Clay?
Aye.
Mayor Crow?
Aye. The bill is passed. We'll now move forward to new business. Who would like to introduce bill number 9395? Mr. Smotherson, may we have the first reading?
An ordinance amending Chapter 400 of the Municipal Code of the City of University City relating to zoning by amending Section 400.2130 thereof relating to off-street parking and loading regulations containing a savings clause and providing a penalty.
Thank you very much. One note for the citizens both here and then are watching at home. This bill will not have its second and third reading until November 25th. Because we didn't get the notice out for the public hearing, so it will not have its second and third reading at the next meeting. It will have it at the following meeting, just so everyone knows that. We'll now move forward to council reports and business. Do any of my colleagues have any reports they'd like to make from any of their commissions? Hearing none. I'm sorry, Mr. Clay.
No, I was. Pull up the agenda from the Senior Commission that met on Monday, October 20th.
I don't think we can. I think you need to go a little bit closer. Thank you.
Sorry. Senior Commission that met on Monday, October 21st. There was much conversation about the joint study session that was held the week prior with the council. I think it's fair to say that the Senior Commission was very glad to get the opportunity to present the work of the commission to the council. They look forward to having that kind of conversation on an annual basis with the council. And I think the mayor was kind enough to suggest that if they wish to do so, they can make the appropriate contact and have that kind of conversation. Do want to note that Marsha Mermelstein is departing as the senior commission liaison, but we will be, the city has already made provisions to make sure that the seniors of this community and that commission has the resources it needs to continue unimpeded. There was a conversation about a continuing issue with the senior commission, which is getting the word out to University City seniors about there not only the work of the commission and senior services, but resources that are regionally provided to our seniors. So I believe there may be some outreach to the city manager and the communications department about some things we can do in that arena. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I wanted to just remind the council and the mayor that the returning artist reception for Christopher Watkins is November 13th at the high school, and it's a 7 p.m. reception. And again, that's from the Arts and Letters Commission. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing none of my other colleagues wanting to speak, we'll now move forward now with citizen participation. We have one request to speak, Gerald Tears.
Thank you very much. Gerald Tears, 7345 Chamberlain. At the last meeting, I commented on the bill in eliminating the Human Rights Commission. In those comments, I mentioned that the bill required some explanation. Several of you were courteous enough to give an explanation for your reasoning in the bill in question, for which I thank you. I think that's a very good thing to do. I don't necessarily agree with the necessity of taking the action at that time, but I do appreciate the explanation. Upon consideration, I think such explanations are generally a good thing. The bills, as in the case of that one, do not necessarily include any explanation of why they are needed, why they are proposed, and there's often no discussion or debate, or very little. The people of U-City deserve an open disclosure of what is being passed, what the bill is about. I realize that it is possible to navigate through the city website and locate the bills that are being brought up. It is often necessary to dig quite a bit to locate them, and that seems to put a burden on the citizens to find them, especially citizens who are not internet savvy, who may not have access to a computer, but are nonetheless citizens. And as mentioned, the background is often not in the bill, although there might be sometimes a set of whereas comments that do some explaining. For instance, two bills were brought up this evening. As far as I know, in neither case was there any real public explanation of what the bills were intended to do, nor the reasoning behind bringing them up. I do understand that Councilmember Carr had some comments, and that somewhat may have made some things a little clearer than they would have been otherwise. But really, there is nothing that said what that bill is going to do with pit bull dogs. And we might want to know that, and might want to know why that was an issue, or whatever the issue is. You strive for an open government, which is, I think, something good. And in general, I have to say you're trying. I don't think it's always successful. I think this area, communications in general, could probably use a little more work. And I know that we brought up the issue of all the TIF meetings a lot, but frankly, this is now and that was then. Okay, the explanation need not be a lengthy discussion. There's no need to add to the duration of these meetings, which sometimes become a little lengthy. You are all busy people, and I understand that. Just a few sentences of explanation would be enough to give a sense of what is being voted on at the time that it is being voted on. As a model, the city manager generally gives a short summary of the need for the items he brings up for a vote of approval. That type of explanation, perhaps not in the same terms because it's a different purpose, should be pretty adequate. I don't think that there's a problem with something of that general brevity, as long as something's brought up. Okay, and then there's the matter of black votes that seem to have touched the nerve, by which I mean the usual unanimous vote in favor. I also mentioned this, of course, at the previous meeting. This is not necessarily a problem. I'm not suggesting that somebody should vote against something every time. It may simply be that the need for an ordinance is always obvious, but it does seem that this is very rare in other municipalities. For instance, I spoke to a former member of the Kirkwood City Council who told me that nearly all bills, even many expenditure approvals, notably tonight's, it was an exception to the usual, had dissenting votes while he was on the council, or at least voluminous discussions. With the diversity in U-City and the variety of opinions that I find in speaking to citizens of U-City, I find it surprising that we have such complete unanimous agreement on the council compared to other municipalities with similar diversity of citizens. We have three very different wards, and one would suppose there would be very different opinions. Are many things simply argued out in private sessions and only the ones which are university supported brought up? If so, perhaps University City should bring up some more. Perhaps we're missing out on progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. No one else? There are no other citizen comments. Members of council. Ms. Carr.
So I guess I'd like to take the bait of on that one. Just because I do believe that that we have a responsibility to educate our citizens, at least to answer their questions. So if you look at the packet, and the packet is freely available, if you don't have a computer or don't use a computer, you are free to come to City Hall and get a copy, a hard copy. Or you're free to, you know, to pick up the phone and make a Sunshine request for a copy of that. And if you look at the item under an ordinance relating to Pit Bull, it's very specific here about what it is. They said it's that the current code says that it's breed specific, dangerous or vicious dogs ordinance, and it presumes that all pit bull dogs are dangerous or vicious. Unlike general dangerous or vicious dog ordinances, breed specific ordinances have faced blah, 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 blah. What I'm saying is that the detail is here in the packet for anyone who wants it. It's not being kept from people. But I think for the sense of expedience, because I do take a lot of time during these meetings. I think that, you know, we do come prepared. And where there are differences of opinion, you will see that that we discuss those openly. So it's not a block vote. I mean, I view this as trying to convince my colleagues, not in the way that some people do behind the scenes, but actually openly, as you saw tonight. So I don't always have strong feelings about every single vote that comes before us. And then if you look again at the zoning text amendment, it tells you very clearly the Plan Commission reviewed the changes and made comments during the regularly scheduled meeting. And the code revision is a proposed solution to address concerns to appropriately regulate new development parking requirements with a core commercial zoning district. So I don't know. You know, it's always that issue about whether it's unavailable or whether it's available. It is available. If you would like, I used to send out newsletters in which people told me consistently, it's too long, it's too verbose, it's, we don't need to get, can you cut to the chase? So this is there to the public, to the media, to everyone, to let you know. So if you don't receive the packet and would like to, there's an easy way to sign up. If you're having difficulty doing that, I'm sure our city clerk would help you do that. We are not keeping secrets here. In fact, we would like you to be involved and to understand what we're doing. And of course, that means that there'll be disagreement across the city. It's not that we're trying to duck our head. I know if we were, I haven't been very successful at it in the last 8 years. So I appreciate the comment, but I do think that if you look at the packet, it's pretty self-explanatory what each of these bills, resolutions, or city manager's topic of discussion. And I'll try to talk a little bit more about what these are. I may just read this, but I also have to keep in mind that some people get to bed before 11 o'clock at night. So,
any other comments by my colleagues? Mr. Cusick, the second ward is on.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I would like to also follow up with what Councilmember Carr stated, that
We are lucky that, as a council, we have the different boards and commissions that do a lot of the work for us. So consequently, when the EDRST recommendations come to us, the EDRST board has listened to, I would imagine, Mr. Rose, help me out, how many applications were in the last round of EDRST applications? Approximately a dozen, 18? And the EDRST went through the hard work of vetting them and saying what would work and what wouldn't work to save us the time to have to do that. And we listen to them and take their recommendations. So some of that hard work has already been done, and we're fortunate that we have the boards and commissions to make recommendations to us so that we have an idea of what kind of discussion has taken place and what to expect. I also seem to think that there is not a cabal that exists that says that we're going to have a 7-0 or 0-7 vote on everything. Certainly, if you know any of the people up here, everyone up here is very strong-headed, and they're going to say what they want to say. And as far as us being able to get together and have closed meetings and decide a lot of these things in advance, I would remind everyone that on Section Q of our agenda, it states that for us to go into a closed session, the reason we would have to do that is for legal actions, causes of action involving a public governmental body, and any confidential or privileged communications, et cetera, et cetera. So by law, we can't go into a closed meeting and discuss these different agenda items unless it follows in one of those categories. And I can assure you that we have our city attorney that does keep us on the straight and narrow when it comes to those things. And I would like to turn tables for just a second and comment on the resident that stood up and said something about the trolley. In this meeting on October 14th, I brought up the issue that the trolley was having problems, and I stated that I was going to request something on the agenda for this evening. I have not done that because the St. Louis County Council actually, I believe, has passed a resolution to go for an investigation. And to the resident of the Third Ward, I would say that I would love to see the trolley succeed. I don't have a problem with the trolley being out there. What my concern was is that there is $51.5 million that have been spent on this, and where is the fiscal responsibility and fiscal management for that, and what will happen going forward? So I would love to see the trolley succeed as well. Thank you.
Anyone from the other wards? Hearing no further comments from my colleagues, I would welcome a motion that the council go into closed session according to Missouri Revised Statute 610.021, Legal Actions and Causes of Action. Motion by Mr. McMahon. There is a second by Mr. Hales. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Hales.
Aye.
Councilmember Cusick.
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson.
Nay.
Nay.
Is there a baseball game or what am I missing?
Councilmember.
Fair enough.
Councilmember Clay.
Aye.
Councilmember Carr.
Aye.
Councilmember McMahon.
Aye.
Mayor Crowe.
Aye. Thank you very much for coming. Have a nice evening.